Welcome to another episode of Mick and Ori's Classic Cars. I'm Mick.
And I'm Ori.
Ori, we've had three wonderful days.
We have had three wonderful days with recently. Our hosts. With Zagami, and we're lucky enough now to have their head mechanic from Zagami. Brad, welcome.
Thank you very much for having
me. Well, what is your actual role? Because I don't think you're just the head mechanic.
No, well, I guess really I'm the foreman. That's kind of my official title. Head mechanic kind of comes into it because I'm across all of the brands that we deal with, training-wise and all of that side of things, and then also doing any sort of technical liaising with customers and sales and that sort of thing and dealing with the manufacturers.
So just before we get on to all the brands you cover, because I actually said that to Mick, I said, Brad knows how all the buttons in the Lamborghini works, a McLaren, a Lotus, a Ferrari, it's unbelievable.
What about the Bentleys?
The Bentleys. Yeah, the right? Bentleys. Unbelievable. But what's your background? So how long have you been a mechanic? Like, when did it start?
I'd say I've been in the industry for 25 years, but I actually started when I was 14, just working at the local service station garage. I'm now 42, so someone do the math in the background.
Nice.
There. But, left school, I think, a year early to just get stuck into the trade as when I started my apprenticeship officially. And, and then from there onwards.
Did you ever think you'd work on Lamborghinis and Ferraris when you started?
It's so funny. I often, through the progression of my career and everything, as a kid going to, you know, racetracks and stuff with my old man to watch racing, if it was drags, if it was, well, fortunate enough as well, with the F1 back in the day in Adelaide, the idea of doing what I do now, never once.
So it's not even a job, is it, Brad?
Well, hey, I get paid, so I guess we'll just go with yes, it is.
It is a job.
No, it's very passion-driven. So,
growing up then, in terms of your passion for cars, any particular models, any particular...
Yeah, so it's really funny, actually. My dad was very much a Holden man back in the day, as everyone sort of...
Probably worked at Holden?
No. Oh. He didn't actually work there, but he's definitely... You know how it sort of seemed, especially in the 70s and 80s and that sort of thing? You're either Ford or Holden.
400%, yeah.
That was pretty much the way it was. So we were a Holden family, and then that sort of rang through a bit for a fair while until Dad bought a Ford, and then it changed up a little bit and you're like, okay, maybe that doesn't exist so much. But it was, you know, him taking me to all the different sort of disciplines, I guess you will, because we'd go see the V8 supercars or we'd go to the drag racing or the F1 when it was in Adelaide and all of that sort of stuff. And then that set me on the path of wanting to see it. But you'd see the supercars, you'd see all the exotics and stuff, and it's like, oh, that's unobtainable sort of stuff because, you know, very grassroots level for us. And when I worked on Ford back in the earlier days, you'd get like an XR8 or an XR6, and you're like, this is the muscle car, this is the big boy, you know. And then later in my career, I moved to European cars and I spent a lot of time with Audi. And then it was, you know, that was when it all really started to change and happen. And then I got the chance to drive some really nice cars and that was the end of it because then I was in, I was hooked, I was done.
So, you know, when you change brands and you go to, I mean, working on a Ford and a Holden, I won't say it's basic, it's probably everyone's trained on in this country.
To be fair, it is when you start progressing through it all, you look back and you realise how basic some of the others.
So when you do go to a brand like Audi and then move on to Ferrari, Lamborghini, Bentley, do you have to go then do a training at those brands before you can start to...
Correct, yeah. We definitely, I mean, not necessarily before you can start working on them because if you're in the environment, then obviously you can...
And you'd have people above you at that time too.
Correct. So you've got guys who are, you know, walking you through it all and exposing you to it, showing you, you know, the differences and how it all works. I guess fundamentally underpinning your pistons, suck, squeeze, bang, blow. It goes up and down. There's a crankshaft. There's a block. You know, there's always the core fundamentals underneath it all. And that's the stuff that you learn at trade school.
Yep.
You know, you go to a trade school and you understand what bit does what to make what happen and that'll progress. And then as you then progress through it all and go to the different brands, then you see what they're doing different, how they're manipulating that to achieve
higher efficiencies.
Yeah, be it efficiencies, performance, or whatever it might be. So, yeah, that's really interesting as that all progresses. But as you say, yeah, you get to a point you can't work on something until you have a very good understanding of how they approach things. So that's where we'll, you know, if we're in Italy or Singapore or even just, you know, local interstate, but you're dealing direct with the manufacturers and they're explaining how their systems are set up, how they work. Yep. Because it's like anything, you can't fix something unless you genuinely know how it works
and how it's been built.
Exactly right.
So day one, Zagami, you start. What's the first car they give you to work? Say, Brad, here you go. Welcome, mate. There's the wrenches. Go.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, I'll be honest. The very first day, we had the boss's wife's Audi A3, and so
is that right?
they would have thought you were a genius. This guy's unbelievable. He's done it in 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's like so. I'd literally just come from Audi, and they're like, oh, well, at least this is familiar for you, and straight into it. But then straight after that,
hope you fixed it though. She wouldn't be too happy.
After that, it was onto a Lamborghini Diablo.
Wow, an old school.
Yeah. So that was pretty stark change.
Engine out?
No. It was pretty simple. It was just straightforward service stuff. So, yep. But that was, I mean, I'd obviously done some work on some Lamborghini stuff in the background beforehand. Yep. You always get a bit of crossover between brands, manufacturers and that. But yeah, that was pretty much the entrance into it all.
Now, you guys are lucky enough at Zagami to represent some unbelievable brands. Correct. You know, we know Lamborghini, Ferrari, McLaren, Bentley, like we discussed. Over in Melbourne, Bobby's got Alfa Romeo.
Lotus.
You guys touch everything.
Yep.
This is going to be like, what's your favourite child? But what is your favourite brand that you guys represent that you think, wow, you're I can't right. believe it.
Yeah, having two daughters, it is very much that way. You can't ever say one over the other because they all have their time.
Yes,
where one is better than the other, 100%. Exactly right. You know.
And won't mention names.
Look, it is genuinely a hard one to say. I think I would say...
Okay, wait a second. Before you answer it then.
Yep.
So in different categories for different uses...
And now we're just getting model specific and then sub.
No, for example, you're not going to want the Bentley Bentayga.
Correct.
Compared to the Lamborghini. You know what I mean? That, so if you can sort of maybe
I'll even simplify it even more.
Okay, let's simplify.
Adrian and Bobby come to you. We are splitting the business up and we're going to have one mechanic represent one brand.
What do you want?
Brad, which brand would you like to go and work for?
Good example.
That's going to take some pros and cons and weighing it up. But I've said for a while now, McLaren seems to be the brand that I resonate the most with.
Nice. Yep.
And that comes from a multitude of different things. But I think that I think that's the best way to put it. That's the one I resonate the best with, because when we deal with the manufacturers, there's a level of comfort, I guess, when I deal with McLaren, because they're a very down-to-earth brand to deal with when it comes to like their technical departments and, yep. and all of that sort of thing. Lamborghini is right next to them, if not it's just behind, only because there's a level of detachment when dealing with Lamborghini, because look, at the end of the day, they're so much bigger. And their departments, everything are broken down a lot more, and there's a lot more process to go through. I'm probably a lot more familiar with Lamborghini product because that obviously is owned by Audi, and there's for a mechanic, there's a lot of, I guess you'd say, architecture.
So I was going to say, how much similarity is there being owned by Audi?
Yep.
You know, the platform is the same, or you know,
correct.
For example, the V10 in the Audi.
R8, versus the Huracan is essentially the same engine. Yep. So essentially, you know, there's
then it's tweaked and modified and things like that,
and bits and pieces. And but so I guess there's a difference between mechanical construction of it and what I refer to as the architecture. So we're talking about data bus systems, how they communicate, how we go about diagnosing them. Then there's the way software, there's diagnostic interfaces, and that's probably a really big thing for mechanics because that's how we talk to the cars. So the diagnostic interface that we use on a Lamborghini is extremely consistent with Audi and Bentley and that side of things, whereas a McLaren, it's a completely different structure and you got to find the information and the bits and pieces in a different way. Ferrari, again, different again, and all of those things. And this is where you start seeing when manufacturers are owned by other manufacturers, and you have your big conglomerates that own a whole bunch of them. So to make their own lives easier, obviously they then spread that across all of them, so there's a consistency. There's very much nuances within those brands. So dealing with Audi, being very German approach to everything, is very different to dealing with Lamborghini, which is a very Italian approach to things. So, and you can see that vast difference when you work on them side by side. But then if you can push that side of things aside, you get down to the bottom of it, and there's a lot of consistency.
So as a technician, with the future of electrics coming, and you drove the McLaren Artura over the rally.
Correct.
There's less for you guys to do when it comes to these electric cars. I mean, where's the future for you guys?
So it's a funny thing. So I would have said maintenance-wise, probably that side of things is becoming reduced, but complexity is just through the roof. So, you know, it's like anything back in the days, because I'm so old, you had a clutch. You put your foot on the clutch, you release the clutch, take your foot off, it closes, and the drive goes through. Cool. We've still got clutches in cars. They're just controlled by a computer, and they use a lot of sensors, and there's a whole lot of other things, and they're managed very differently, other than we used to use our left foot. Now the computer's doing all the left foot
all for you.
So then you put a it's more so hybrid than electric. So full electric simplifies a lot, and it's all very managed, so it takes a lot out of our hands. Whereas hybrid, you've still got your internal combustion engine, and then you add the electric engine, and then it's how they're all joined together, and then how they can function independent of one another all together, or do certain things each. And that's where it starts getting very complex, and that's where for us, if everything's working perfectly fine, then we have very little to do. But as soon as it's not, then it's a very, very involved thing. And then we're dealing with extremely high voltages, in cases up to 800 volt in the electric system. So it's up there.
So how you approach it is completely different than the basic old school
Correct.
Ford or Holden. And that progression of, you know, you change a starter motor in a Ford or a Holden, let's face it, you can see it. You can see the ground. Yep. When you open up the bonnet, you can see the ground.
Yeah.
These days you can't see anything. You've got the covers and that. Yep. So, you know, you've got the Lamborghinis or the McLarens. Mm-hmm. Now, to change a starter motor, it's not a simple thing anymore, is it?
To be fair, in Lamborghinis and McLarens, it's actually pretty easy to do a starter motor. Yeah, once you've got that floor pan off, because, you know, we've got dry sumps and all the rest of it, the starter motor's actually right there. But to be fair, starter motors don't really bugger
up
anymore.
Okay, so what about things like, what is complicated? Is the AC unit sits, or?
That's the funny thing. So everything used to be made to be accessible, to be worked on, to, you know, like you say, back in, you know, your old 70s, 80s type, mainly the 70s, but 80s type cars and anything around that, it was all made accessible. You open a bonnet, something was put somewhere so you could get to it, and that side of things. Whereas now everything's built to efficiency. So you'll have your engineers, and they're basically given an amount of space to work with. Now we need you to ram everything possible into that amount of space, and then that has to be built as its own entity, and then when the vehicle's being constructed, that has to fit into this hole. That's their approach to it. Like that's their view that they worry about fixing it. That then just becomes our problem. So it may be as simple as like a valve that controls something, be it oil, be it air, be it, you know, whatever. They'll put it in a space because there was space that they could put it.
Even if you can't get to it later.
Yeah.
They don't care.
No one thinks about later. They think about building.
Well, and that's the thing though. When they construct it, they're not going, oh, okay, well, we've got a percentage probability of that component failing. We need to make it accessible. It's built to be efficient on a production line and all the rest of it, which understandably, and then because, you know, they never build anything with the intention of it failing.
Having to be, yeah. Which is interesting on the rally, and we might have to get Brad back to speak about the rally.
Cause I think it's another topic completely.
100%. But there was a photo of a McLaren, and the guy said it went pop. It just went pop. He took a photo and he sent it to the group chat. And I said to you, Mick, this is someone that's got no idea. I said, oh, that's a disaster. Absolute disaster. The big rubber thing has come off of this thing. And Brad just said, mate, just connect it back on, you'll be fine to go. From a photo, man.
And you said, how the disaster we're going to do
call
that?
Call the tow truck. Right. So you guys just see things and you know.
Yeah. What, did you get that going?
No, well, so that was actually a BMW that happened to. Wasn't a McLaren. Yep. So, but not that that's here
but
nor still, there.
Yeah, but you just saw a photo of an engine that something had gone.
Yeah, well, it's like anything. You recognise components. So, and, you know, a lot of people would recognise an awful lot of things. So I could clearly see that there was a throttle valve in there. It was an induction pipe. The photo wasn't the best, so I couldn't really tell. And plus, I'm trying to lead a tour of 50
you shouldn't be looking at your phone, Brad, while you're driving
50 plus supercars, but that's all right. And the photo, it looked as though, which isn't an uncommon thing to happen, is a boost pipe's popped off because it's under all the pressure. If the clamp's not quite tight enough, it'll just pop that off and then completely change the characteristics of the intake for the engine. So, just to look at it, I could see what had happened. The unfortunate reality was that the point where it clamps onto the throttle body had actually broken. So it wasn't necessarily a case of, to bolt it back on. But if it were a slightly different variation of that same system where it is just a good old-fashioned clamp, loosen the clamp, slide it back on, do it up tight, and he would have been back on his merry way.
Which brought us to a point, because Mick and I started talking about while we were driving around in the rally, was that all these different supercars, you said you had 50-odd supercars come to the rally. Do they need to, could you have tested for that? Could we have prevented that accident, that pipe, falling off with a clamp?
Rupturing,
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, if I'd bought my car and said,
check it over,
Brad, I want to take this on the rally next week, 3 days, you guys would give it a once-over, I suppose, and look at it. Would you have picked that up? I mean, could that have been picked up?
It's like a lot of things on cars. You can check for the things that are more common than not to see failures in. You look for signs of potential failure. So if that pipe were cracked or fatigued in some way, we'd probably see some signs of it doing it, or we'd look at diagnostics and there might not be something that quite lines up properly, and we'd go, oh, that's a bit odd for that to be there. We'll have a look at that side of the system and look for an area that has the potential for failure. So in that case, if we saw some sort of cracking or something around that pipe, then we could address it.
But realistically, it only popped because it was under pressure for 3 days.
Correct.
Because driving around the city, that must probably would still be going now.
100%. But it might have been an odd little oil leak there. You know, they could have had some seepage, so you pick it up from things like that as well.
Exactly. So certain things will get telltale signs where we can do something with it or predict it. Otherwise, it's like anything. They tend to fail from the inside out. So we can look at certain things that will give us ideas and guides and whatnot. But, a lot of the time, unfortunately, inside out, you don't see the problem until it's a bit too late.
Well, really, we didn't have that many problems on the rally this year at all. I mean, how many cars were there? 50, you said?
I think
in our group,
including tour officials.
Yes,
we're followers, Mick.
I think our final number was 54,
54 cars, different brands.
Yep.
To have a couple like and a BMW that something happened and a McLaren that something happened, I mean, that nothing major though.
No, so like, I mean, it's like anything. You look at any motor racing, everything's really quite pushed to the limit. Granted, what we're doing isn't pushed to the limit because we're doing touring stage side of things. But we're still leaning on these cars a lot more than you would, like you say, driving around the city.
That's right.
You do that day after day, year after year, no worries. But as soon as you start leaning on a car, that's when all its little gremlins can present themselves.
And particularly if they haven't been lent on before.
Exactly. And that's probably the big thing. It sounds funny, but cars actually really benefit from being leaned on from the
We say that all the time. To be driven. You need to do these things with it if there is something going to go wrong, let it come out. Yeah. Otherwise, you're never going to notice it.
Yeah.
Hence the BMW.
Exactly.
That would never have happened.
It's actually a really funny thing, and I get probably in trouble a little bit for it, but as a mechanic, and you always see those stories of, the mechanic took my car and thrashed the crap out. Whilst I don't doubt that probably does happen here or there, but when we're testing a car or driving it, the whole point of us doing maintenance and checking things and everything is so that when you take it, you don't have to worry and you can use it for the performance that it's got. Now, if we just look at things, that's cool. That's good. That ticks off a lot of boxes and checks a lot of things and gives everyone a really good idea. If we'll say lean on the car a little bit, we're not doing anything untoward, but we're checking that it's behaving the way it's meant to. Now, if you're dealing with supercars all day long every day, if I drive the car around the block at 40 kilometres an hour and
does nothing,
and you know, a tenth of the throttle, okay, I've checked it, works really good under that scenario. But are you going to drive it like that?
No, correct.
Do you want to be sure it's going to work when you're leaning on it, so to speak? Then you know, we're very
so you
governed
guys
in
do that,
and it takes a level of sensibility as to what you are going and to do or not do, and you know, you work within those restraints. But if you're not
so, do you take
familiar?
Would you guys then take those in the hills, like a quick burn up to the hills, because you're so close to the foothills here? We're lucky.
Yeah,
in
so I mean, it's the sort of thing. Obviously, we're working well within the restraints of driving a vehicle on the road.
Yep.
But you're gonna let it rev out a little bit more. You might, you know, you'll put it into a manual mode if it's you know, your DSG boxes and that sort of thing, and you'll let it rev out a little bit because that's where the customer's going to be using it. You're not going to drive like an idiot. You're not going to speed. You're not going to do all of those silly things. But you're gonna make sure it's behaving the way it should under acceleration. Exactly. You know, we are fortunate we've got the freeway there, so we can, to a degree, test it.
Just up the road from the
and also shop. Things like, you know, you've got the rev limiter as well. And we had a situation with our Emira.
Yep.
That it was shortchanging at 4,000 revs for some reason.
The rev limiter went from 7 down to 4.
Yep.
So, redline. And I said to Ori, you can't drive like that, because I thought, change gears, mate. What are you doing? But it was
I was redlining every gear change.
It's 4,000 revs.
Yep.
So I said, look, we're at the traffic lights, switch it off, switch it back on. Yep. And then it went back to 6. Yep. So I'm not sure what would have occurred for that to have happened.
Yeah, without sort of directly looking into it. But a lot of – and this is the really good thing now with the way that engines are managed. So back in the days, you had a carburetor, a distributor, and
– no rev limiter.
Moving bits. Well, you did have a rev limiter because physics would stop
it. Oh, that's right. It would start bouncing.
But now everything is very much controlled. So whilst you don't want to lean on that constantly, but it's – you know, if your gearbox oil temperature is too low, it's going to restrict your power because it needs to warm up. The oils need to be at a certain state for things to work properly. Engine oil, all of these things. So it'll restrict you. It just won't let you do it. Like a good example.
It's a safety really, it's a safety feature.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, of course it is.
So you can't blow the engine. You can't get into trouble.
Exactly. And that's manufacturers protecting their own product. They've got to provide warranties on these things. And naturally, it's very expensive if things do go wrong. So you need to, unfortunately, take away variables that you can by being if a customer wants to over rev an engine or something, then the manufacturer controls that as much as they can to put the ball back in their court, so to speak.
That's fantastic. Brad, we could talk for ages on this topic.
Okay. We're going to have to get Brad back because I want to talk about the Classic Adelaide and the rally.
Adelaide Rally. You and your Classic Adelaide.
The Adelaide Classic Rally.
Anyway, Brad, thanks for coming on the show. It's been fantastic to have you on the podcast. And, of course, Zagami and your crews of the hospitality, it's been absolutely fantastic.
Well, I can say one thing. The team at Zagami and Brad, I know, look after Rose's X5 and tell you, since they've looked after it, absolutely brilliant.
She doesn't drive it though, does she?
No, we don't drive it. No, we just drive it to the service once a year and back.
Anyway, we're going to leave it there. Of course, you can catch us on the show at mickandori@gmail.com. Of course, our YouTube videos and Instagram. But we're going to leave it there. And I, as always, remember, if your car's not a classic,
it will be one day.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.